True West, December 1972. The Lone Ranger by Clinton G. Cukor. Radio's fictional character introduced several generations to the Old West. This article will serve as a similar introduction to what went on behind the microphone. January 30th, 1933, was the birthday of one of the most famous fictional heroes created in the 20th century. Whole generations of boys would grow up inspired by the character's ideals. A hearty "Hi-yo, Silver" heralded the beginning of exciting Western adventures throughout Radioland every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for more than 20 years. One of the very first introductions of the new program went: when the Western United States was first opened to settlers, the promise of easy wealth brought both honest men and criminals to the new territory. Both found that wealth could only be purchased by hard work, and the criminals returned to their old habits. The masked rider of the plains fought them tirelessly, however. Astride his great horse, Silver, he rode through the length and breadth of seven states in the cause of justice, and in time he brought law and order to the lawless frontier. Return with us to those thrilling days when the West was young and adventure lay at the end of every trail. The Lone Ranger rides again. Thus began the program that would be aired to millions of American boys and their fathers. Later, many of them would be overseas fighting in a world war, but they would not forget the hero of their childhood. From the mud of Italy to the sands of the Pacific, "Hi-yo, Silver" served as a rallying call, password, or identification. Almost everyone is familiar with the Lone Ranger in some way, but how many know the real story behind the program? Was Tonto a real Indian? How many different people played these characters? Who really gave birth to the masked rider of the plains? In the mid-1920s, a former member of the legal staff of John H. King became his partner in the movie theater business. King had built the second theater in the United States in 1905, and by 1929 he owned 20. George W. Trendle, the new partner, and King decided to sell the theaters and try a new venture, radio broadcasting. They purchased the Detroit radio station WXYZ in 1929, and Trendle took active control. By 1932, Trendle felt the time had come to feature local programming, and he dropped the station's affiliation with the Columbia Broadcasting System. Trendle hoped to create an entirely new image for the station. His first project was a drama program. Before the day of continuous recorded music, the most inexpensive programs to produce were dramas. Big-name stars, orchestras, singers, or comedians were not required. Trendle's idea was to slant the dramatic series toward the youngsters in his radio audience, knowing many adults would tune in on the program and its sponsors would have an even greater exposure. Sometime earlier, the station had had a Western program entitled Warner Lester Manhunter, which was discontinued when it failed to catch the public's fancy. Trendle still liked the Western adventure idea, however, even though there were many such programs on the air at that time. He wanted his character to be more than a mediocre cowboy hero. He wanted an adult figure, distinctive and mysterious. He wanted a man children would respect and believe in, someone they would want to grow up to be like. Trendle decided the setting would be Old West, the character a lone operator. Around Christmas 1932, Trendle and his radio staff held a meeting to discuss the new production. The staff included the studio manager, Brace Beamer, who one day would be the star of the show. Trendle explained his idea, comparing his hero to the screen's Zorro, portrayed by Douglas Fairbanks. A suggestion was made to mask the man and liken him to Robin Hood, and Trendle liked the idea. He mentioned he wanted a rather daring type, that a Texas Ranger would fit the role well. An inspired staff member gave voice to the words that in a short time would be known to young and old alike: the Lone Ranger. Trendle's Lone Ranger would have still more distinctive characteristics. His horse would be a white stallion. When the time came to select a rider, Trendle called on Francis H. Stryker, a radio scripter from Buffalo, New York, who had written the Warner Lester series. Stryker's only knowledge of the Old West derived from stories told by a relative. His great-uncle had served drinks in a Nevada bar, thereby conversing with such great storytellers as Mark Twain and Bret Hart. With these recollections in mind, along with a great imagination, Stryker began writing Lone Ranger stories for radio. When the program's popularity increased, Stryker began writing comic strips, and these and a total of 12 novels would keep him busy with the Ranger for almost 2 decades. The Lone Ranger was a little over 6 feet tall, weighed about 190 pounds, and had black hair. Remembering a radio series he had written about Robin Hood, in which he had given the archer silver-tipped arrows, Stryker decided silver bullets would be fine for his new character. Bullets of silver would signify they were not to be used wantonly. Suggestions were given by everyone on the staff, and Brace Beamer suggested silver horseshoes for the Ranger's horse. The name for the horse was, of course, Silver. The first episode found the Lone Ranger, indeed, a cross between Zorro and Robin Hood, a laughing swashbuckler. Subduing outlaws after a fierce battle, he tied them up and rode off laughing about their defeat and coming arrest. The Lone Ranger's last words on that program were, "Come on, Silver, that a boy! Hi, hi, hi! Ha, 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 ha! Now cut loose and away!" The first production met with mixed feelings from the staff, and revision followed revision until the two main ones were left. Trendle didn't like the Lone Ranger's frivolity, and the staff thought he spoke too eloquently. A compromise was reached whereby the Ranger lost his spirit but kept his polished speech. The hi-yi-yi and away yell did not seem quite right either. Perhaps a derivative of the English hi-ho, the new sound became hi-yo, Silver, away. The William Tell Overture provided theme music from the very beginning. It remained so throughout the life of the radio production into the movie version. And when the Lone Ranger became a television star, it still identified him. No Lone Ranger fan can hear this classic without recalling the Western hero of days gone by. Jim Jewell was the first director of the program, and he wanted the best of everything for the show, especially the sound effects, which were so important to radio. Gunshots at first were created by simply hitting a cardboard box with a stick. Later, the sound was perfected by metal barrels being struck by a rat trap. Silver's gallop was created by sink plungers, plopping down on various surfaces for different terrain. The listener felt that he was right there on the scene. One could hear the wind, the man and animal breathing, the harness creaking and jangling. Yes, a radio fan could sometimes see things far better than television could later show him. The sound effects department had a fantastic collection of simple devices to implant images in the radio audience's mind, and they did their job well. The classic fictional story of the Lone Ranger's origin has become a legend. It is the tale of a gallant survivor of an outlaw ambush who dedicates his life to bringing all wrongdoers to justice. The story went like this. A patrol of 6 Texas Rangers, searching for the Butch Cavendish gang, was led into ambush by a renegade guide, and after a fierce battle, all of them were left for dead. That night, an Indian came upon the bodies. On examination, one ranger appeared to be alive, though badly hurt. The Indian carried him to a nearby cave, where he treated the wounds with all the skill and knowledge of his forefathers. 3 days and 3 nights, the Indian stayed at the wounded ranger's side. On the 4th day, the ranger awoke. Weak and confused about the length of time he had been unconscious, he recognized the Indian as one whose life he had saved many years before when both were young boys. "Your name is Tonto," said the ranger, "and you call me Kimo Sabe." "You remember," replied Tonto. "That good. You still Kimo Sabe. It means faithful friend." Some versions of the story translate it as trusty scout. Realization of his situation seized the ranger, and he told Tonto of his plight. The killers would know him by sight, and if they found he had escaped death, they would hunt him and kill him. Tonto replied that he had prepared 6 graves so that everyone would believe all the rangers had died. The ranger decided that his name would be forever buried with the rangers, one of which was his brother, Captain Ranger. Then, to make sure his identity would never be learned, he resolved his face would be covered by a mask, a black mask which Tonto fashioned from the slain captain's vest. Tonto vowed to remain at his friend's side in the fight against outlawry, and at that moment set the theme when he said, "You only ranger left now, you lone ranger." During the battle that annihilated the group, Captain Reed had asked his younger brother, the Lone Ranger, to care for his wife and son, who were on their way to him from the east, if anything should happen to him. This, young Reed had agreed to, and also to work the captain's silver mine to support them. However, the captain's wife lost her life when the wagon train she was in was attacked by Indians. The young son was cared for by an old lady, Grandma Frisbee. After years of searching, the Lone Ranger and Tonto located the boy, Dan Reed, just as the old lady's life came to an end. Young Reed joined his uncle and Tonto between school sessions back east. The silver mine was sufficient to support the youngster and to supply the Lone Ranger with the means to continue his fight against outlawry. This, of course, explained the silver bullets and horseshoes. The name of the very first radio Lone Ranger has been practically lost by the passage of time. Reportedly, his name was Deeds. After only six episodes, Deeds was replaced by George Stennius, now known as George Seaton. 3 months later, the studio manager narrator, Brace Beamer, replaced Stennius. Beamer retained the role for a few months and then quit the studio entirely to open an advertising agency. He relinquished the role to Earl W. Grazer, the first Lone Ranger to stay for any length of time. Unfortunately, while driving home through the outskirts of Detroit in the middle of April 1941, Grazer's car crashed into a parked truck and he was killed instantly. 10,000 people are said to have attended the funeral of the 32-year-old actor. The $150-a-week role was open again. Tonto was John Todd, a small, balding Irishman and former Shakespearean actor. The hard-riding Tonto was in his 50s when he began the role and near 80 when he performed in the last live broadcast. Todd had a special chair in the studio where the staff kept an eye on him in his later years. Many times he would nod off to sleep while waiting for his next line. There were times when the Lone Ranger, Brace Beamer, would read his lines, glance at Tonto and see him snoozing, and have to ad-lib an answer to his own remark. When Grazer died, Todd carried the show while the ranger in the story was wounded and unconscious for several days. Then the Lone Ranger began getting stronger but could only speak in a whisper. If you are an old Lone Ranger fan, you may remember that his voice seemed deeper and more stern than it had been before he was wounded. The new voice was that of Brace Beamer, who by then had given up his advertising agency and rejoined the Detroit station. The former star, Grazer, had been a chubby home gardener and badminton player who had never ridden a horse until a few months before his death. Beamer, on the other hand, would never disappoint the picture of the radio role created of him. He was a big 6'3½" athletic man who handled pistols and was a crack shot. Brace Beamer was born Brace Bell Beamer in 1903 at Mount Carmel, Illinois. Brace was a family name from his grandmother's side of the family, and Bell was for his grandfather, Judge Bell. Shortly after World War I began, Brace Beamer lied about his age and joined the Army. He served with the Rainbow Division in France and became the youngest sergeant in the fight. He received many decorations and was wounded in action. Yes, he surely had lied about his age. He was 14. After the war, Beamer sang for a time and made records. In 1922, he began his radio career in Indianapolis, then joined WXYZ in 1932 as station manager and announcer. He became the most famous Lone Ranger of them all in 1941. After assuming the role of the masked man for the second time, Beamer played the part until the last live broadcast, number 2956, on September 3, 1954. Amazingly, the 30-minute program was broadcast completely live 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, for more than 20 years. During this period, one of the greatest narrator-announcers, Fred Foy, joined WXYZ. His delivery of the new opening for the program will always be remembered by Lone Ranger fans. With his faithful Indian companion, Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains led the fight for law and order in the early western United States. Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past comes the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again. Foy remained with the radio show until it left the air. He then became narrator for the television series. When the Lone Ranger productions came to an end on Television 2, Foy reportedly found it difficult to find work in his field. Everyone said he sounded too much like the Lone Ranger. He is now the announcer for the Dick Cavett Show and does various network commercials. After the radio series went off the air, Brace Beamer slipped into relative oblivion. He had nothing to do with the movie or television Lone Ranger, but was planning on a new career associated with a Lone Ranger record he had made. On March 1, 1965, however, Beamer suffered a heart attack and died at his home. Silver was in a nearby stable at the farm where Beamer and his wife Lita raised thoroughbred horses. The horse Silver was real, actually doubly so. While impersonated by sound effects for years on radio, the creator Trendle owned Silver. Embrace Beamer owned another white stallion, Silver's Pride, which he preferred riding in rodeos and parades. To most people, of course, this was Silver. A year after Beamer died, his widow, Lita, suffered another loss when the great white horse had to be put to death. Mrs. Beamer loved the horse as much as her husband had, for she had personally groomed him, fed him, and cleaned his stall. She said, "He never made an ugly move. He was 27 years old." The fictional Silver also has his own origin story. He was a wild stallion running free in Wild Horse Valley when the Lone Ranger first donned his mask. The great white horse ruled a horse herd of some 20-odd swift mares and stallions. By their leader's craftiness, the herd had managed to elude capture by the ever-present horse hunters, both white and Indian. While in pursuit of the Butch Cavendish gang, the Lone Ranger and Tonto approached the valley a short distance behind the outlaws. Soon, shots were exchanged, and one of Cavendish's bullets cut down the Lone Ranger's gray horse, called simply Pony Hoss in the first novel, The Lone Ranger, by Gaylord DuBois. Cavendish would escape, possibly forever, if the ranger could not obtain another horse. Walking through the valley leading Tonto's scout, no origin story concerning scout, the Lone Ranger and Tonto viewed a spectacular sight. A great white stallion and a giant buffalo were locked in a battle in which one would surely die. The horse put up a tremendous fight, but the large, shaggy head of the buffalo was tearing crimson streaks in the beautiful white coat. The battle was about to end when the bull buffalo delivered a stunning blow that sent the stallion to the ground. Just before the horns were about to bring death, two sharp reports sounded from the guns of the masked rider of the plains, and the giant lay kicking, his life ended. Tending the wild horse's wounds and bringing him back to his feet, the ranger and Tonto prepared to continue their search for Cavendish. The Lone Ranger knew if the white horse would take the saddle, he could surely regain the lead the outlaw had obtained. As the ranger attempted to saddle the horse, the animal bolted and ran away, stopping a short distance away. He made an impressive sight in the sunlight, and the masked man said, "See how the sun reflects off his white coat." Tonto agreed. "Him shine like silver." "Silver, that would be a name for him," exclaimed the ranger. "Silver, here, Silver." The horse slowly approached his new master. And so began a fiery horse with a speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty, "Hi-yo, Silver, away!" In 1938, Republic Pictures obtained the movie rights to The Lone Ranger. A 15-chapter serial entitled simply The Lone Ranger was made. The original story was changed by Republic scripters to create a new angle. They banded together five actors in a sort of guess-who story of who was the real Lone Ranger. Lee Powell was the secret Lone Ranger, with Herman Bruce Bennett Dix, later to become one of the first Tarzans, Lane Chandler, Bob Stewart, and George Montgomery playing the other Texas Rangers suspected of being the Lone Ranger. In 1939, a second serial, The Lone Ranger Rides Again, was made, starring a well-known cowboy star of that period, Robert Livingston. Tonto was played by Victor Daniels, called Chief Thundercloud by the studios, in these serials, as well as in a full-length feature, Hi-Yo Silver, the last Lone Ranger film of that era. Clayton Moore donned the mask for television's Lone Ranger in 1949. Chicago-born, he left high school at 14 to join the trapeze act. In the following years, he dug ditches, mixed cement, and became an Air Force corporal. Later, he became a model and finally did some bits in B-grade movies when he arrived in California in the late 1930s. Clips from the movies won him an audition as the masked rider. Moore was a good choice, as he was also a stuntman. At the end of the first season's filming, the producers replaced Moore with John Hart, a taller and heavier Lone Ranger. Hart was unsuitable, however, and before half the second series was finished, he was replaced by the returning Clayton Moore. Moore had made 78 films prior to Hart's making an additional 52. All told, 166 half-hour films were made, but only the Moore ones are shown on syndication. The new Tonto for television was Jay Silverheels, full-blooded Mohawk Indian, born on the Six Nations Reservation in Ontario, Canada. In 1938, he went to California, where comedy star Joe E. Brown encouraged him to take up acting. Silverheels had made approximately 30 motion pictures when he won an audition for the Lone Ranger series. The 6'1 Silverheels and 6'3 Moore made a very impressive-looking Lone Ranger and Tonto. In 1954, the Lone Ranger Incorporated was sold by the Campbell Trendle Agency of Detroit to Texas oil man Jack L. Rather for $3 million. One of the first projects of the new owner was a new motion picture entitled The Lone Ranger, made by Warner Brothers Studios in 1956. The half-million-dollar budgeted movie had a good script, exciting locations filmed in color, and a first-rate cast. As was the case in the very first Lone Ranger movie, the new work also inspired a sequel, and The Lone Ranger and the Lost City of Gold was filmed in 1958. Since then, there have been no new Lone Ranger films. A Lone Ranger cartoon appeared on television briefly in the early 1960s, but was a far cry from the earlier creation. The original television series is still shown throughout the world in syndication, however, and the radio shows sometimes enjoy new life as transcriptions are rebroadcast from time to time. Merchandising items involving the Lone Ranger are still popular, and the comic strips begun by Fran Stryker in 1938 live on. 12 novels were written about the masked man, the first in 1936 by Gaylord Du Bois, the rest by Francis H. Stryker since 1938. Stryker literally had something to do with all of the Lone Ranger productions in the early 1930s and 1940s. He wrote the scripts for the radio shows, did the comic strips, wrote the novels, and finally edited and supervised the 30 episodes of the two movie serials. On September 4, 1962, Francis H. Stryker, while driving to a newly purchased home in Buffalo, New York, was killed in a head-on automobile accident. He was 59 years old. Today, Clayton Moore is the only Lone Ranger left. In the early 1960s, he moved from Tarzana, California to Minneapolis, where he began selling real estate. He still made personal appearances regarding the Lone Ranger, however. When the 1960s came to an end, California drew him back again, and he now resides in suburban Hollywood. It is rumored that plans are in the offing for a Lone Ranger television series in color to replace the old black and white films. Jay Silverheels does television commercials and has also acted in major motion pictures since his Tonto portrayal. George W. Trendle, the originator of it all, died. Tonto portrayal. George W. Trendle, the originator of it all, died.